I'm Peter Ayers, and you're listening to Stages, the podcast that converses with creatives.
Correct. Craft. Oh, we started now. Yes.
Yes, of course we've started.
I'd been working at the Playbox Theatre, and I'd worked as an ASM on a show, a Louis Nara show, The Golden Age.
The golden years of Hollywood. That was what I loved.
Absolutely don't profess to be good at it at all. I could study and I could be much more diligent in my homework.
So in a sense, you know, I think really good directors are really good editors.
I was really incapable of going on, not just as a writer, but I felt as if I was incapable of going on as a human.
One more day before the storm. And Trevor says, stop. He said, you look like little Lord Fauntleroy, dip the wig.
So I swooped in and just... Every scene I had with all those different people, they just made it work.
But after some time, I realised that grey comes in many, many hues.
I've had the luck, and without the luck, I know plenty of entertainers out there that are wonderful, funny, just never had the breaks.
I'm what I would call a dancer's dancer. Like, all I ever wanted to do was dance.
You've got a better memory than me, that's for sure.
Oh, I've done my research. I've cheated.
And you'd had a little piece of paper there, mind you, so have I.
We both had pieces of paper, so that's been
alright. I wasn't silly, was I?
No, I think it was great, yeah. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Peter. God bless.
Hello, I'm Peter Ayers, and welcome back to Stages. If you're a first-time listener, thanks for joining. It's good to have your company for another insightful episode of the show where I get to sit down with some great folk and chat theatre. I'm thrilled that I can introduce to you in this episode Daniel Assetta. Daniel Assetta is an Australian musical theatre veteran with extensive credits for his young age. Daniel is currently based in New York City, where he recently made his Broadway debut in the hot ticket show Anne Juliet. Most recently, Daniel appeared in the original Australian company of Hamilton as Samuel Seabury and performed Tony in the Opera Australia production of West Side Story across Australia, New Zealand and Germany. His other theatre credits include A Chorus Line, the original Australian company of The Book of Mormon, Cats, Wicked, Funny Girl, The Gathering, Follies in Concert and Curtains. He is chuffed to be living his dream, based in New York and starring in a Broadway show.
Can you hear me? Everything's clear?
Everything's great. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Good, good.
Perfect.
How's Tobias?
He's good. He's good. He has been busy with lots of writing stuff and launching his third book in like a month now in Australia, which is going to be very, very exciting. And then it comes out later in the US, later in the year here. But yes, we're now on opposite schedules again. So
fabulous. Well, this episode of Stages is going to make history. I've spoken to a few husband and wife, performing arts duos. So you're my first husband that I've recorded different episodes with. So, there
well,
you
that's
go.
Exciting.
A milestone. Daniel Assetta, lovely to chat to you all the way from New York. It's Friday afternoon where you are and early Saturday morning for me. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Dan, it would seem that you've achieved a great deal in a short amount of time from your professional debut in Wicked in 2014. So it's been about 10 years, of course, but you've been working at it for much longer. I mean, probably 30 years.
Literally my entire life is what it feels like.
So when did that start? Obviously, was it dance classes, singing classes?
Yeah, so I started dancing when I was 3. I think my first singing lesson was like around 7. I just like from the very beginning it was always something that like just wanted. It just like it truly was an inspiring journey, like from a child. I watched so much. My parents weren't really into performing. There's not really any other cousins or anyone that like was singing or dancing. And for some reason, there was just something from a very young age that like inspired me to want to do this. And the dance school that I went to, which was the Glendie School of Dance, was the foundation for my training and also provided me with so many opportunities that allowed me to dip into being a professional performer from like a child, which, you know, I was only just saying something to someone the other day. I was like, I kind of forget that not every child had that sort of experience growing up. Like for me, it was what mine was. So I didn't really think about it twice. But like as a child, you know, there was like, I got to dance on So You Think behind Guy Sebastian at 12 years old, dance behind Kelly Rowland. I did the ARIA Awards with Kate Miller Heike, like all as like a teenage boy, growing up and just being already involved in the entertainment industry. I was like performing in band competitions, in RSL clubs, like handing out, you know, charts to like, you know, four-piece bands at like 10 years old. Like it's such a strange thing to like think about, because like I was so into it and no one forced me or pushed me to do any of it. It truly was just like I loved doing it, and it really did grow from this like childhood thing, and kind of has led me to now when I guess like I'm still doing it and still just as kind of motivated and driven and passionate as I was as a young boy.
Yeah, I talk to a lot of people and who've come from families that there's not one performing bone in anybody or musicality, but there seems to be, you know, people literally tap dance out of the womb. I mean, it's a calling for some people, and that is the only vocation that has ever been in their head, and that focus drives them throughout life to achieve big time, which you certainly have.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like so many elements of like what you do as it, well, for me anyway, what my childhood journey was, has paved the way and helped me grow and learn, I guess, exactly what I wanted to do when it was time to graduate and professionally work as an adult. So I'm very grateful for whatever gifts were sort of imparted on me before even knowing what I wanted to do.
You're very loyal to the Glenda Yee School. Obviously, that figured big time in your youth, giving a young person, or lots of young people, of course, that go through that wonderful school, which is based in Sydney, isn't it? It's not a national school.
Yeah. No, it's not. When I was there for most of the time, we were in Liverpool, and now it's out in Preston's, so not too far from where it was. But it truly was Glenda Yee, who is now like, you know, one of my wonderful friends, but was, you know, a mentor for so many years. She really created something quite special with this school in creating opportunity for a lot of young people. We had choreographers coming in and out of that school that were hiring like young people to work. Like, I don't even know if that really happens anymore. Like the types of opportunities, we had Nikki Webster at the studio as well, because she was one of Glenda's students too. And so we got to be in Nikki Webster's film clips. Like we were on Disney Channel, like with Jungle Book 2. Like there was just so many things along the way, even like modeling experiences. I did like for the duration of the Sydney Olympics, I was in the Superdome. I think I turned 8 maybe. I was like on my like 9th birthday or something. For the duration of the Olympics, I was like modeling, doing like dance fashion parades for all the official merchandise for the Olympics. So like this world in many different facets has like been a part of my being for so long. But like a lot of those experiences from a young child that gave me a taste of this and that were all because of, I guess, where my parents just happened to send me and allowed me to kind of grow and to, I guess, like work on my skill set.
Wonderful to have such supportive parents also who recognize some sort of talent and will do all they can to further the talent and nurture it.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for both of them. I wouldn't have been able to do it without them.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, we're talking to you. You're in New York because you recently made your Broadway debut in And Juliet. Tell me about that journey. I think you've been in New York since the end of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. After an established, very established career in Australia, which we'll talk about through the episode. What happens when you arrive in New York? You obviously have to seek representation. You have to find a home. You have to.
Yeah.
it's a big adventure.
It is. It's so funny. I spent so many years trying to get here that there was not really much thought put into once I actually got here in terms of like setting up a life that resembles something like what you had established for so long back home. And of course you're met with so many challenges. It's such a strange thing because although we are, you know, an English speaking country, there's just so many like weird like things that we call different things and like their operations of like, you know, even just getting a rental place, like the process is different. There's so many differences between Australia and the US that like I didn't even really take into account until like I had to actually do it, including like setting up a bank account and getting a phone plan without like any employment and without a credit score because like credit cards don't really matter in Australia as much. So like there were so many things that I had to face when we first arrived here to kind of set up before even launching into, okay, now it's time to start auditioning. I had to deal with all of that life stuff first. And then I was very lucky to be connected with a really great agent. And that was just because of being a part of the Hamilton world back in Australia. We had a couple of Americans who were working on the show and in Book of Mormon as well. And I kind of asked around the people that I knew that lived in New York and they were like, oh, yes, I'll put you in touch with. And so then, you know, I've ended up with really wonderful agent and I'm very grateful for them. And that kind of kickstarted what I found to be quite a difficult auditioning journey for a lot of Americans to kind of experience that after so many years in Australia was quite interesting because obviously I've been very fortunate to be continually employed and working on wonderful projects back in Australia, but I had no idea what was going to be coming my way here in New York. I mean, like I'm a new person to this industry, which is an interesting experience because obviously they know of my credits and my shows because they're internationally recognized, but you know, casting directors don't know who I am. So I'm introducing myself to people for the first time. I'm, you know, networking and trying to, you know, make a community of friends even that are within the industry too. So it can feel like you also can exist and belong in this new community on the other side of the world, which, you know, because of time zones, it's quite difficult to stay, you know, completely connected with everything back home. And so I had to really put myself out there and be like, okay, I'm here now. It's time to invest in, you know, this next chapter of my life and kind of like see where that will lead.
Does it surprise you that some 18 months after arriving, you are appearing on Broadway? Did you expect it to happen that soon or?
You know, I think the dreamer in me, for many years before arriving was like, I'll get there, I'll audition and I'll you know, I'll probably be able to get into a show. And then I kind of got here, and the reality of the situation was that, you know, last year I, you know, went for so more auditions last year than I have in my entire life.
Wow.
And the amount of no's that I had to receive, which was such a, I feel like, you know, that really kind of pulled things into perspective for me. I was just like, okay, this is really specific, this industry over here. And that was something that I learned very quickly. And I think that's where it's very different to back home. There is some sort of, well, the pool is bigger. So therefore, if a creative team is looking for a specific type of thing, they will find it. Mm. No matter how many, you know, calls they have to have, they know that that person will walk into the room. There is no like trying to like, you know, morph someone into something that they need to do a particular role. It's very, very, I don't even know what word I'm searching for, but it's very like specific. And I think that that's something that really shocked me when I arrived, because I was like, in Australia, I myself definitely have pride myself on being so versatile so that I can continue working in, you know, whether it's a legit classical sing of a show or whether it's, you know, requiring me to do pop or dance this specific style, or you want a circus skill? Let's see if we can learn it. That's us Australians. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas here, you know, I found, oh, like people really like do their one thing and they know exactly who they are and they just kind of drive that all the way forward. And that was a really like eye-opening experience for me, because I was like, oh, like I can do that. Like, or I could, you know, I can do that thing. And then like, I'm like, oh yeah, I can do that. But there is probably someone better at that than me who focuses purely on that skill. So that was a really interesting thing to discover.
You had a great run in Australia, doing lots of long runs and almost, I assume, going from show to show to show. So what was it like having that you know, that 2023 year of a lot of rejections? How did that affect you?
Well, it was humbling, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest, apart from like, you know, about 9 months before we started Hamilton post-pandemic, a lot of my life I've defined myself on structure and being a part of something. And, you know, being here in New York City, which everything was brand new, including, you know, people, the industry, so much, to be dealing with all of that, and then on top also dealing with like just like the wrong fit, you know, like I would get so far and then they'd be like, oh, we actually just, you know, like we needed someone who actually looked a bit older. And those are the things that, of course, you cannot change. So I had to kind of just be patient and trust that all of my hard work will pay off and will eventually lead to the thing that I'm supposed to do, because it's worked out so far. So I was like, well, and that is hard. It's hard to kind of sit with that and be like, okay, I'm going to have to just keep chugging along and like, you know, don't lose faith, but like this is such a crazy thing what we all do. And I have a massive appreciation for anyone who is in New York City doing this year after year after year, because it is, you really have to love it to be here. It is just a completely different level of, you know, the rate of auditioning and like turning up and doing your best. And then also like trying to work and trying to juggle a million things. Like, I think like as an Australian with the experience that I have had over the last 10 years back in the industry there, like I've never experienced anything like this in my life.
A lot of Aussies who have gone over to New York to try and cut their teeth on Broadway have had to go out and do regional tours, first of all, to sort of build up some credits. So I guess your credits, in a way, have been those big name shows like The Book of Mormon, Wicked, Hamilton, in which you appeared in those premier Australian productions. So that gives you some great street cred, I imagine.
It definitely did help. I think especially something like Hamilton still just has such a great reputation for collecting, you know, people of great work. And so because the team were the American team, it meant that, you know, having them on my resume was very notable. And that kind of, I think, I'm very lucky for that, to be honest, because I think that, you know, those little things, even though they weren't here in America, they just kind of were able to be like, okay, so like, he's done some great stuff. Let's see what he can do, you know? So it definitely helped quite a lot. But also, you know, Americans also like to see things. You know, last year I got to do Light in the Piazza at the New York City Center. And that was like my first American performance here. And to have done City Center only after like within 6 months of arriving, I mean, like it was just like, I couldn't really believe what was going on, you know, like in amongst, you know, such incredible Broadway people on this stage and working with, you know, the team there at the New York City Center Encores, which, you know, I've listened to cast recordings from Encores, you know, and I've seen these things, and to kind of be like, oh, wait a minute, like, I'm involved in one of these things, and like my headshot being like outside of the City Center building, like it was all just like a little bit surreal. And I mean, Light in the Piazza is like one of my favorite shows. The score is obviously just so gorgeous. And to be part of something like that, coming back to the city for a short amount of time was truly just so special. But yeah, it's like, it really has been an interesting experience, because like there are so many things that have surprised me about being over here that is just so different to what I've experienced back home.
Sidebar with Light in the Piazza, of course it was written by Adam Patel. Have you managed to see Days of Wine and Roses yet?
No, I haven't, because I'm on the same schedule.
Oh, right. Of course. Makes things a bit difficult to embrace the other shows on Broadway. I saw it in January. And,
I know. I feel like... Yeah, oh, you did? Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty special. But it's the precariousness of Broadway theatre. There is so much competition and, you know, it's just announced its closure.
I know. I'm actually... It is really quite a difficult time post-pandemic with... so much of what is coming to Broadway. It's like, I was actually having this conversation the other day about Anne Juliet, because like the show is doing so well here. Like it barely got affected by even the January, February dip that everyone talks about. You know, it's obviously just like something that, it's a clever script, great music, you know, it's an all-round kind of spectacle to look at as well, with great costumes, lighting, set. And I think, you know, it makes people feel good. Like, and it brings about so much joy. And at the end of the day, that's what people obviously want. So, you know, it's really fun to be a part of something that is doing so well and bringing so much joy to audiences who come to see it.
How long has Anne Juliet been running?
So it opened kind of almost around the time that I arrived in New York, just before, actually, by like a couple of days, which is very fitting. And so it's doing really well. And, you know, the audiences keep coming back too, which is a really like fun thing to see, because people have a great time the first time and they're like, I want to hear all that music again. I want to experience, you know, this story, and I think people see themselves in the show and feel so empowered by the diversity. So like, you know, there's there's so much to love about it, and I'm so grateful that my first Broadway show is one that is so loved.
I love that you say my first Broadway show. You're expecting more. I'm good to see.
Oh goodness. Well, I mean, you know, I didn't travel all the way here just to do nothing.
Yeah. So talk us through your journey with Anne Juliet. The audition. Mm-hmm. What did you have to do for the audition? Was that an open call or?
My agent kind of approached me about this particular track that was opening up in the show. And I had seen the show already. So I knew exactly which one it was. And I was like, oh, this something felt really right about it. It was a show that, like, out of all the shows that are running, obviously, apart from the ones that I have already done in Australia, Anne Juliet was kind of one that really interested me. And I was like, I've never done a jukebox show before. I've also never really done a pop show before, but I kind of have been singing. That's where I started my training, singing, you know, Uptown Girl and the Backstreet Boys. And, you know, and it's so cool to kind of go on this weird journey of, like, doing all this other stuff in between, but I've never actually done a pop show. So it always interested me because it's something different and something that I haven't done. So it was on my radar. And of course, the Australian company was cast and put up basically as I was leaving as well. So I was a bit disappointed to not be able to audition for the Australian company. And so I waited until a spot opened up on the Broadway company. And like most people who are currently in the company now have been there since the beginning. There's really only like a couple of people who have gone on to another show or project. But most people are still the original Broadway cast. So that's also really cool to be a part of. So the audition came through and I cover Shakespeare and Lance, as well as play Henry and the bathroom attendant as my usual track nightly. And so I was put through all of my paces, sang all of the material, did all the scene work, danced, you know, the combinations that were required of me. And then I came back the next day and I just had a really good feeling about it. There was something, I think after so many auditions in New York, I had finally come to peace about what will be, and everything sort of aligned. And it just, yeah, it really did feel like it would be the one. And I know that sounds silly, but like that morning I literally wrote it on my notes in my phone. I was like, today is the day that I'm booking a Broadway show.
And where were you when you got the news?
Well, I got the news when I was waiting for a couple of days. And I mean, those days were excruciating. And then I actually was just walking on 8th Avenue when my agent called. And I mean, like, how do you receive that news when that's kind of like something that you've been waiting to hear your whole life? It's for someone to say, you're going to be on Broadway. And it really was, you know, that moment where I was just so overcome with like, I don't know, it just feels like there's such an expectation that I certainly have had of myself to do it, because I made the commitment to move from Australia, where I was already, you know, living out my dream and like doing wonderful things that I definitely could never have dreamt of as a child. So then to kind of like take the risk to move my entire family, you know, my beautiful husband and my dog over to the other side of the world, to make this crazy dream happen. And then when you finally go, oh, it's happening, it's very surreal. And it didn't hit me for a while, because like from the moment I found out that I was going to be in the show, a week later I was in the building meeting everyone and doing costume fittings. And then I started rehearsals as soon as the new year ticked over. I learned Shakespeare first, teched it in my second week, on, like, literally on stage in amongst the full company, then learnt my track, went into the show, did all of the, you know, I think I got through maybe like almost 2 weeks, and then I went on a Shakespeare and did 5 shows as Shakespeare, and then like we were on the Drew Barrymore show doing a press event, and then like, you know, there was just like, it was just like this roller coaster that I was just like, I don't even know what's happening. Like, it's all happened so quickly. I barely even processed the fact that I'm in the show making my Broadway debut, and all of a sudden the ball is rolling and it's just going and going and going. And, you know, and then I started rehearsals for my second understudy and doing fittings and, like, you know, and where are we? We're not even like a couple of months into the year yet. And like, and from when the day I started to now, like, I feel like it's just been like go, 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 full of excitement. Of course I'm exhausted, but it's just been so magical.
What was opening night like?
Oh, you know, I remember feeling like it was going to be really emotional. And it was up until the actual show. Like, I was very giddy and very, like, I was receiving all of these wonderful messages from everyone back home, and including the Angeliette Australian cast, who put a beautiful video on Instagram, which I opened that video as I, like, reached the front of the theater and, like, started crying to kind of feel the support of the Australian community. Like, there was so many people were just like, everyone back home is so proud of you. And, like, it just was so overwhelming. I can't really even explain what that feeling was like. But then I did the show, and all I could feel was just joy. Like, I was just so happy. Like, I couldn't wipe the smile off my face. I really, like, took it in and made sure to, like, really enjoy that show. Because, well, you never get another Broadway debut again, right?
Right.
So, and so many people had told me that. They were like, make sure you, like, record a little video before or, like, afterwards, just of yourself just chatting, to be like, or write something down. Like, you know, make sure there's a couple of moments in the show where you actually just look out and process that moment. And I think I did. I think I was able to take that in and really soak up what I had worked so hard for.
The theatres that you played in Australia, the Arts Centre of Melbourne, the Capitol in Sydney, the Lyric in Sydney, are big theatres. The theatres in New York are much more intimate front of house there for the auditorium. What are they like backstage?
Well, you know what? I'm in the Stephen Sondheim Theatre, which was renovated. So because it used to be the Henry Miller Theatre. It actually reminds me a lot of the Lyric, to be honest, because it got a facelift. Everything internally, externally, it's still the same building from the front, like the actual front face. The history of the theater is actually really fascinating. I'm a bit of a nerd, so I did a bit of diving because I was like, I want to know, like, what I'm course. Part of, what this, the, what the this
ghosts,
legacy is.
The ghosts of the past who have appeared on that stage and in Correct. Those dressing rooms,
Yeah, and I mean, like, that theatre, before it was now the Stephen Sondheim Theatre, was, it was so many things. Like, it was a nightclub at one stage. Like, after it was the Henry Miller Theatre, like, there was a whole, like, progression of it. But then, like, of course, the revival of Anything Goes with Sutton Foster was there. The original Cabaret revival with Alan Cumming was there before it was moved to
Studio 54.
I was going to say that, yes. Studio 54. There was apparently a big accident that happened on the street that on 43rd that meant that they had to, that people weren't able to access the theater. So for ages. And so they actually shut the theater down. and moved the show because obviously they weren't ready to finish yet. But yeah, recently, I think Mrs. Doubtfire was in there. And yeah, it's really cool to just like be part of, you know, this legacy of Broadway shows in this beautiful theater. It's a smaller theater, that's for sure. There is no bad seat in the house. And it's, but it's really cool. I think, it has kept some of the old school glamour of like what an old theater is, but without all of the stairs to get up and down. There is modern elevators in there, which is definitely a blessing at the end of the night.
So is it a big ensemble dressing room that you all share, or are you in smaller groups?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the ensemble of Anne Juliet is actually like much smaller than I think most other shows that I've been a part of. We have a Romeo crew dressing room and we have a Juliet crew dressing room. So I'm in the Romeo crew, and we have 6 onstage Romeo crew and then 3 swings.
How do you like to keep your dressing table? You got photographs of home on it. Neat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so funny. Like in Australia, every time I've been a part of a show, like I always kind of like have like really decked it out. But here, like it almost feels like it's, you know, well, it almost feels like it's like my second bedroom. Like because, like I know that we're not going anywhere, you know. So it's like, it's more functional than anything, because like most days I don't even go to work with a bag. So it's like everything's there, all of my utensils and bits and pieces and heat packs. And like literally it's like I had to buy a duplicate version of everything that I own.
Where are you living? You on Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Have
you
been? I'm in Manhattan. I'm uptown. So around the Washington Heights area,
nice.
Which is really cool. A lot of actors live up here. And so it's a really great community. And it's nice to also be able to escape the craziness of Times Square and to not hear sirens and things like that at night. It is quiet, as Lin-Manuel said. It's quiet uptown.
In the Heights.
And it's very... it's very cool to kind of like be close. There's some parks up here as well. And yeah, it's nice. It definitely is a different environment, which I kind of enjoy that you get to experience a bit of both.
I spoke to Andy Carl, who's here doing Groundhog Day a mm-hmm. couple of episodes ago. And he was amazed at the Australians' schedule over the weekend in that you do Friday night, 2 shows on Saturday, 2 shows on Sunday. So it's... 5 shows uh-huh. effectively within 48 hours, which you would have done for about 10 years. It must be nice to sort of have a quieter weekend show-wise.
I can't even tell you how nice that is. it really is just like so nice to have a Sunday morning and a Sunday night to be just kind of like, you know, getting some sun or like just being able to, you know, spend time with friends when they have their weekend. Funny that.
funny. Off mic, as before we started, you were saying that you went on a Shakespeare last night.
That's
the lot of the understudy, I guess. When were you notified that you were going on as Shakespeare? And I guess the weekend is unknown at the moment whether you will be Shakespeare or doing your other plot.
I found out that was probably the least amount of notice that I've had to do it so far. So I found out when I was already at the theater. I had to get there for something early. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And it's been a month since I last did it. So it was a nice, like, I had to, okay, let's refresh everything and go over all that needs to be done. But I mean, you know, that's part of the thrill and the excitement about like being an understudy and like I mean, the people, the principal cast in this show are out of this world. I mean, like, you know, I got to play opposite the incredible Betsy Wolfe as my wife. So, like, you know, which is, I mean, Tony nominated performer who I have looked up to for years from afar, watching everything that she has done. And so then to be on stage playing opposite her is quite surreal.
Well, in your career, you've you know, Ruthie Ann Miles at Light in the Piazza, working with Casey Nicolau on the Book of Mormon in Australia. You've worked with some big names over the past 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's...
Who stands out for you?
How special is that, you know?
Yeah.
Who stands out for you as a
great teacher, perhaps, that you learned from?
You know, I really loved doing Funny Girl with Caroline O'Connor.
Yeah.
I mean, with the production company. She was incredible. Obviously, I have a huge soft spot for Gemma Ricks. I mean, watching a performance like that for 2 years, so consistent, so incredible. And I was 19 when I started Wicked. So, like, you know, to kind of have someone like that to look up to from a very young age was very inspiring.
You talk about doing Wicked for 2 years. How do you keep it fresh? I mean, there must be times that you arrive at work and you think, oh, I don't have to go to Oz again. I don't have to put on that white shirt and a badge again. But is there something about the theatre and the footlights which just repairs anything which happened during your day, and you think it's showtime?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it's like for everyone, but I know for myself, like, it's always been a safe place for me. Like, ever since I was young, like, the theatre has always been, like, my happy place, a place where I can, you know, express myself and do the things that I love to do. And so I think, yeah, there are hard days. And, yes, it does get exhausting, and we're dealing with, you know, a shoulder that's not doing the things that it needs to do, or, you know, you're coming back from sickness and those days are harder as well. But, you know, all in all, like, I think the passion and love that I have for what we do is the thing that just continues to drive me forward. So, yeah.
I kept meaning to say, too, I saw you play Tony in West Side Story at the Arts Centre in Melbourne, which...
Did you?
Yeah, you were fantastic.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh, thank you. I mean, that really was a dream.
Well, one of the great scores of the musical theatre.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got an understudy role in your head, you revisit that regularly, I guess, just so that you don't lose any of it in case you have to go on.
Yeah, correct, yes. Well, West Side was interesting because, like, I had regular scheduled performances because I was technically the alternate.
Right.
So that was a different type of experience because it was regularly in my head. I knew I was doing it every week.
Yeah.
Whereas something like this or King George in Hamilton, you know, they were things that, I mean, King George, like, arguably, I know that it's only 15 minutes. So, like, you know, you go over it, but it's like three songs that you basically just have to sing and just get out of your system. And you're like, all right, good, we're good to go. Whereas something like Shakespeare is really involved. The scene work is the bulk of the role. So, you know, that definitely is something that as I continue the run here in New York, I'm going to have to keep refreshing it. And unlike Australia, you know, Americans can take vacation. So, you know, it's really cool because, like, I already know that I'm going on for a week in June to play the role. So, like, you know, and there are personal days scheduled. And, like, I'm also taking vacation. I'm coming back to Australia, which will be really fun. But, yeah, it's a very different way that things operate here, I think.
So what's on the bucket list now? there must be other shows that you'd like to do, and perhaps even, I guess, you'd like to originate a role on Broadway.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like a lot of people who are here in New York, the dream is to be part of a project from the ground up. So whether that's to be part of the reading that happens, which then leads to a workshop, which then may lead to an out-of-town tryout, and then a hopeful Broadway transfer. I mean, for a new project, that sounds like something that is very exciting, and I would love to be part of something like that. So that's definitely, I think, my main kind of goal and dream over the next sort of how many so years. But I mean, to me, I love theater and I love everything about it. So like, I am truly just excited to see where the journey takes me, because there's so many possibilities here in New York. There's always revivals. There's always, you know, new works. There's always transfer works from London, which seems to be happening more recently again.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, but obviously something brand new would be very cool.
Well, Danielle Aceta, thank you so much for this wonderful insight into your New York journey and Broadway debut.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful, and it's very exciting to see you kicking goals, and may they long continue. And if anyone's in New York over the next 12 months or something, run to the Stephen Sondheim Theatre on West 43rd Street and see Dan in Anne Juliet.
Yes, I would love to see you there.
All right, please say hello to Tobias for us, and
I will.
And all the very best.
Thank you so much.
If you happen to be in New York over the next year, do rush to the Stephen Sondheim Theatre on West 43rd Street, where you can catch Daniel Aceta and company having the time of their lives in And Juliet. Until then, though, you can also catch the show in Australia. It's currently playing a season in Sydney at the Lyric Theatre and starring former Stages featured guests Hayden Tee and Casey Donovan. I'm Peter Ayers. Keep well, keep warm, stay safe, and I'll catch you next time on Stages.